Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favor to ask. And that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends. And don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Amro Khalid. Amro, good afternoon, man. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
No, look, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, it's not every day that you get to speak to some goalkeeping coaches on a podcast, but one of a few that I've had on so far. So I guess without giving too much away, maybe just a bit of background on who you are, what you do, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I'm academy goalkeeping coach at Leicester City Football Club. I've been coaching now for about 15 years. I've worked with goalkeepers, everything from grassroots, semi-professional to professional goalkeepers, experiences with a lot of goalkeepers and players from different cultures, different backgrounds, different nationalities. And it's been an eventful journey, a lot of learning along the way, but worked with some really good individuals and learnt a lot from some exceptionally good coaches along the way to add to my coaching toolbox on my journey.
Awesome. So, you know, you mentioned that it's a range of experiences that you've had, and obviously you've worked in different environments. Where did the journey begin into coaching? Because I think for a lot of us, it's a failed playing career. Was that the case for you?
It was. I was in a non-league circuit, and I was with Barwell Football Club, who at the time were managed by Jimmy Ginnelly, and I was good friends with a goalkeeper there anyway. And around that time, I set up my own goalkeeping school within the Leicestershire area and said, would you like to be a goalkeeper coach next season? And at that time, I was, you know, suffering with a few niggly knees, as we do and as we find it. And I really just took like a duck to walk with it, and I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed working with the wide variety of characters and young people, and you know, and it was a great starting point to really try and test and find out what I was and who I am as a coach.
So just on that, then, you know, how has that changed for you? Because obviously you're talking about trying to find yourself as a coach there. Obviously, over the years that you've worked, there'll probably be some things that, you know, I often look back at my own journey and think, right, what are some of the things that have just kind of stayed the test of time, right? And what are some of the things that I've further developed and have adapted? But also equally recognizing that there's some things that I might not do as much anymore, but it's probably because of the context that I'm working in.
I think managing individuals is a big thing. Managing different characters, depending on the age groups and the demographic of people that you're working with. I've worked with guys who are playing in the football, who've played in the football league and have played 200-300 games. And I've worked with young individuals who are playing Sunday league football and just love goalkeeping and want to get better. And I think it's really, really key to, as I've got older, and especially over this season, is to really understand where each individual is at on their journey and what they need. And the learning cycle isn't straightforward, and the most simplest way of doing things might not be the best for that person or that individual. I was chucked in the deep end on my first, you know, my first senior coaching role, working with guys that had played, you know, around the non-league circuit or were dropping out of the football league. And, you know, and they'll say, who's this young individual? You know, why is he telling me to do this? Or why is he telling me to do that? And it was learning how to manage people and manage expectations across the board as well.
I say it's quite interesting, obviously, working right across the spectrum in terms of obviously seniors and down to the youngest ones. How does that change for you in terms of how you work with them? Because obviously you're talking about them managing individuals, but...
Yeah, like I said before, you've got to be relatable to them. You've got to find out what they're about, what do they like. And that can't just be from a footballing standpoint, you know. You can't just have them walking on the grass and going, oh, we're going to do this, this and it today. How was your day? What did you do today? What you've been up to? Did you see this? Did you see that? And when you start to work with older players, it's more about, you know, meeting them as not as... learners, still they're still learning, but meeting them more on a social side of things as well, and you know, treating them as adults. And sometimes you forget that, and there's still got to be that, you know, that middle ground where, look, we're here to work, we're here to meet these goals, and this is what we're looking for. But when it comes down to working with young individuals, you know, it's trying, you know, coming on that more fun side of learning, and you know, trial and error, and being a little bit silly sometimes, but change up your lack of seriousness in terms of communication styles, and having a more softer approach in order for them to buy into what the goal is of the sessions or the match.
So I guess just on that then, you know, within the context of working with those seniors, how much do you find actually you're imparting knowledge as opposed to being more curious about what they're trying to get out of it, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it's got to be an open floor in terms of strategy of delivery. It can't be command style. It can't be, we're doing this, this is the way to do it, because I've set myself up to fail like that before. You know, I had a lot of experience early in my journey working with guys who were on loan from football league clubs and stuff like that. And sometimes they didn't, you know, relate to that. You've got to create that open dialogue, that open communication. And it's very much what if or what about, you know, style of delivery in order to meet the goals of the individuals within the session.
I think it's quite interesting because obviously, you know, I think people, especially if you're working with goalkeepers and you're a goalkeeping coach traditionally, I guess you just have that natural empathy for the situation. But for coaches who are not goalkeeping coaches, they often think it's a completely different world.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think it's really trying to, you know, certainly from my experiences, it's like, well, no, you're doing the same things. You're just having an understanding of the content, right? The technical stuff a little bit more specifically. So I guess on that, how much do you think coaches who aren't goalkeeping coaches maybe overestimate or underestimate how much of an impact they can have with goalkeepers?
Yeah, I think, massively. They underestimate how much of an impact they can have on the individuals. They, you know, it's quite cliched that, you know, there are these bunch of weirdos over in the corner by themselves in their own little group. And I've been very lucky this year to work within an MDT group that is very open, and they try to include the goalkeepers to a massive degree within the sessions because they understand the importance and the role of a modern day goalkeeper. And, you know, I can give my opinion in the style that we play and the philosophy that is being implemented to the goalkeeper and to the team. But it's important that we have that connection between the outfield group and the goalkeeping group in order that we all sing off the same hymn sheet in terms of what we want from the individuals in order for the wider collective of the team.
And how do you manage that process then? Because obviously a large consideration for a lot of goalkeeping coaches, or rather a large consideration for the outfield coaches, is, oh, we've got a goalkeeping coach in the building, they're the expert, I'm going to leave them to it. Yes, I'll integrate them, I'll get their views and opinions, but actually I'm not really going to have much to say on that. Because, I mean, do you find that as a challenge sometimes, trying to get the input from the outfield coaches?
I think it varies from coach to coach, if I'm honest. there's been times where I've worked with individuals who have been very, no, you go over there, we'll have them back for the small-sided games or the 11v11 at the end. We're not bothered about what you're doing. You just go and develop them to save shots, take crosses, and that's what we want. I've also worked with individuals who are really key to having the goalkeeper within the practices, understand they are an intricate component of the team, and you know, everything can start through them as well in terms of building the attack, and also from an out possession thing when we're facing, you know, finishing attack practices. And it's, you know, it's like I said, it varies from coach to coach. And sometimes you have to work hard to try and change the mindset of an individual in order to have the buy-in of them.
Have you had a situation where you've not been successful doing that?
Worked with some individuals. I won't name names, but it's been very much, you stay over there. Once there, it's we'll deal with them. And, you know, sometimes... have I agreed with the way they've done things? No. And I tell you something now, it's not everybody's going to like you as a coach. Not everybody's going to like you as a person in terms of, you know, the further up the chain you get and the individuals that you work with. But I would always say, be flexible with your philosophy and don't stray too far away from that. But also be there to compromise. I think compromise is massive. And the older I've got is that I've become more flexible in my methods and the way of doing things and find my way to include individuals in the goalkeeping development process in order for the benefit of the wider group.
Hmm. And you know, use that word there, philosophy. So I guess just on that then, you know, what is your approach to working with goalkeepers and developing goalkeepers, especially from a young age?
I think especially from 9s to 14s, you are laying the foundations of the house. You've got to refine their skill set, give them an understanding of, you know, the correct techniques, the correct skills to implement. And it's going to be a lot of trial and error. They're going to make mistakes, you're going to concede goals. And I think the biggest thing that we see in modern young goalkeepers is conceding goals is a negative thing. It's not a negative thing, it's a positive thing, because you can go and learn. When we are working, you know, with those 14s to 16s, it's now really starting to refine their tactical understanding of when to implement skills, when to implement, you know, certain shot stopping actions, do I defend the area by coming taking the cross, or am I going to drop in and defend a goal? And then we're also looking at the psychological points as well. You know, resilience is huge, you know, concentration, communication. These are all key components that make up a strong top-level goalkeeper. And then when you start to work, you know, towards the 18s, upwards, you know, it's an open dialogue, it's an open floor, because you're looking at the end of your maturation cycle, you're looking at goalkeepers are now, you know, fully grown adults, majority of them, and you are, not every action suits that individual. So you need to be able to be flexible and see what the goalkeeper's thought process is in terms of implementing a skill set. You know, you might be able to give little nuggets of information, but sometimes it might not be the correct bit, for them, because it might not suit them from a physical standpoint. But, you know, today's game, depending on the level you are playing at, kind of dictates the goalkeeper's style that you want.
So just building on that then, I'm just thinking out loud. There is obviously a lot of things that can be transferred across coaching just players generally and then working with goalkeepers and vice versa. What are some of the, I guess, twofold really, what are some of the questions that you might utilise or methods that you might use in the first instance to try to really gauge the understanding and the perception of the goalkeeper in the first place?
Across nines to seniors, it's most goalkeepers are visual learners. They are visual learners. You need to have examples in front of them. It's all well and good, you know, going out, yeah, we're going to do this, this and this, but if they can't see it back, how are they going to find the points to get better? You know, young individual, we know how kids can be, you know, you can talk and talk and talk and it'll go in one ear, out the other. So having them visual references, giving examples, breaking it down on the pitch, but also provoking group discussions, especially with those age groups, 12s, 13s, upwards. And that's a big thing, you know, I probably say in my coaching toolbox is having the ability to provoke discussion amongst the group in order to find the solutions. And that might be just by going in during the drinks break, dropping a few questions in and stepping back and observing. And I think sometimes as coaches, the observation part of our craft is what we miss out. And having that ability to step back and look around and see what's going on within the practice or within the game and going, okay, actually, no, he does this and he does that or she does that. You know, how can we go and affect them from a certain manner where you might pick up another coaching point, you know, in order to deliver to that individual?
And that's quite interesting because obviously I think you're spot on. I think observation is often overlooked as a powerful tool in coaching. I think sometimes it is just taking a step back and just watching what's happening, just to really gather the context and understand, actually, where do I need to step in? Do I even need to step in right now? Or am I just allowing them, just observing? I can see that they've got an idea of what they're doing. They just need time to play around with it. You know what I mean? So I think that bit is really key. So I guess, but coming back to the thing about the foundations, obviously you talked today about laying the foundations from a young age group. What about... No, from your experience of those goalkeepers who maybe have transitioned from playing outfield into goalkeeping or come across from different backgrounds, right? Because I think that obviously changes the landscape of what you're trying to get done with them. So I guess if from that, then what would you say are the key things that you think a goalkeeper is required to have as a set of capabilities or abilities, if you like? Because it's a real bugbear, man, when people often say, yeah, the goalkeeper's great at shot stopping. So that's what they're there for. Yeah. Fundamentally, do you know what I mean? So if they're not good at that, then they probably shouldn't be in goal in the first place.
I think we become infatuated by movement. I think movement is an infatuation I've heard a lot of coaches talk about. And sometimes the big individuals get overlooked because they are late. They're going to be late developers. They are going to be, you know, in a situation where, oh, okay, yeah, he's a brilliant shot stopper, but he can't play with the ball at his feet. When in fact, we need to look at, right, is this individual coming out of another sport? So, you know, tennis players, badminton, cricket, wicket keepers, do they play other sports? Can they transition their skill set from that into goalkeeping? I also think that, you know, things around coordination, again, back to that visual awareness, you know, they're never going to be, you know, 100% in each of these categories, but I think these are really important components when you're laying the foundations in terms of developing footwork, developing handling, developing their shot stopping, developing their ability to play with their ball at their feet, and also the ability from a psychological point, what is their character like? The character is important. It's all well and good being a good, you know, player. Let's not talk about a good player. But if their character is not suited to loving the game and enjoying it and enjoying the social aspects, then that's where you start to have a few red flags in terms of being able to develop that individual.
Mm. No, it's interesting because obviously, like, yeah, from my own experiences, just to give you a bit of context as well, you know, I don't refer myself to as a goalkeeping coach or an outfield coach. I call myself a football coach, but with goalkeeping and outfield coaching experiences, because I think they are very intertwined. And I think the closer we can get to a situation where people are seeing them as one in the same, if you like, I think the better we can kind of collaborate and become more effective at developing both outfield players and goalkeepers. Because we never know where the journey of the player is going to take them, right? And for some, you know, often we see goalkeepers coming from an outfield background, but actually, you never know later down the line, you might see situations going the other way, right? So I guess, you know, I've had the opportunity to coach for the last 15 years across different environments and, you know, seen the way I work change. Some of the things I believe change, and, you know, I've become more familiar with what I didn't know and now know. What have been the biggest changes for you in your coaching journey from when you started to now?
I think it's learning to embrace individuals on an emotional connection. I think because I used to be very regimented and very, like I said before, command style, it's having the willingness to compromise, having the willingness to listen to what other people think and accept other experiences. And it's also showing the willingness to learn from other sports and other coaches outside of the football industry. I got a chance to view a basketball session once, and I think that really stuck with me in how they set their sessions up in terms of the carousel and the session layered within inside each other in terms of the practices. And then also just stepping back and observing and listening to the way people communicate, not just in a sporting background, in terms of business, in terms of day-to-day conversations, and how that applies to certain social groups or certain ways of delivery styles needed in order to meet the individual's needs.
So I guess on that then, I mean, I'm going back to I'm just thinking, reflecting my own experiences and just say, you know, I was hoping that you'd say something of what you've just said, because fundamentally there is a shift, right, in what people view as effective coaching. Traditionally, it's been very kind of instructional, command style, more I say you do kind of approach. And I think we're moving to a generation now where it's been moving very much down the other end of the spectrum. Is that necessarily the right thing? Because I think the ability to go back down the other end of the spectrum is almost being lost.
I think we have to find the middle ground as coaches. Past couple of years used to be very much, this is your session plan, this is what we're sticking to, this is what we're doing today. We don't move from that piece of paper, and we're very regimented. I think now you have to look at the session plan as just a framework. That session plan is there to be flexible, adapt, whether it be numbers, whether it be time, whether it be, you know, you have to manage one individual because of their loadings or they've got a little injury, you know, in their carrying. And you also have to, like I said, have an open floor. It's about the player at the end of the day, and the player might have an opinion, but you have to show that, you know, that opinion they have, that you're there to listen, you're there to want to embrace that, because otherwise that's where resentment starts. And, you know, and this guy wants it doing it this way, and this is the only way. Where if you have that trust connection in terms of showing the open dialogue, I think you get more out of an individual, that 10, 50, extra 10, 15%, definitely.
And I think it's just important as well, something that you touched on earlier, and I don't know whether you use the word intentionally or just it was just flowing with what you said, but use the word accept their way rather than accept their point of view rather than agree with, which I think is really key, right? You know, I speak to a lot of coaches in my work, and I talk about all the time, and even as a coach developer and you're working with coaches, my job isn't to get you to agree with me, but my job is to help you get to a point where you can give me something I accept as justified rationale for why you're doing what you're doing, essentially.
Yeah, 100%. I think, like I used the word compromise before, and it's got to be, there's got to be a ground where you meet in the middle, in terms of, like I said, opinions count from everybody, And one way isn't one suited way for everybody. If I'm going to get to point, you know, C or D, I might go to, you know, up the line to come back down the line in order to showcase the goals that we're trying to reach for that in that person or that group. I think, like I said to you, coaching is changing. It's changing fast. You know, young people are coming through who are starting their journey and they want to move 100 miles an hour. And I think a big thing they need to see is that to embrace what other people have done ahead of them, embrace the learning, embrace, you know, the different styles, embrace the individuals and characters that you'll come across in order to progress and develop your craft, in order to meet, to develop that, those individuals or group that you are working with.
You know, I think that's part of the challenge though, with the younger, I guess, I don't want to call them necessarily younger generation, but the newer generation of coaches coming through, in the fact that they probably don't have as much appreciation for some of the stuff that has gone on in the past. And, you know, they are very much in a society now where it's gone, do it freely, do it your way. So almost in many respects gives them a situation where they're not really being guided effectively, or they've not been given a good grounding in some respect.
I think we're past the stage, I think, with the next generation that are coming through of, I don't know, is it cliche to say, earning your stripes? I think earning your stripes, willing to volunteer or willing to go and gain experiences. You know, there's a couple of young lads that I've had conversations with before, and they want to be at the end game with already just starting their journey. And I think the biggest thing that any coach will tell you is sacrifice. Sacrifice.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
You know, I know guys in a similar situation to me who were working their day job, and in the evening they're going to go and watch this person at this training ground, or they're going to go and have a coffee with that person just to be able to pick individuals' knowledge and take little bits of nuggets of information in order to develop their craft. I think we spent a lot of time as when we were younger as coaches is being infatuated by, I want to be here, right? And the journey is never straightforward. You know, it's, I made an example where someone said, can you showcase your journey on a presentation? And I used a mountain basing in the journey. Sometimes you're going to have to go down to go up again. And I think, you know, dealing with failure, I think you have to cope with, is massive. You're going to have to face rejection numerous times. Like I said before, not every person is going to like you. Not every person's going to embrace the way you do things. But you have to be flexible. You have to be willing to step back and reflect. And you have to be willing to ask other people's opinions in order to develop yourself as a person.
So just let's link onto that then, you know, build, is think about other people in your journey and getting reflections, getting feedback. Who've been some of the most influential people in your coaching journey? Because I think
there's been a lot of guys obviously that I've worked with. I think I'll start with a D&I coach, Nimesh Patel. Nimesh has been my sounding board in terms of giving me advice from a not just an outfield coach perspective, but from a coach development perspective in terms of strategies of delivery, you know, utilizing different methods, you know, in order to develop my framework, my questioning styles, my communication strategies. And then definitely a gentleman that I owe a lot of thanks to and support to is Justin Bowley. Justin Bowley helped me get on my journey, helped me develop as a goalkeeping coach. Again, have been a great sounding board to me, but being able to observe and work with him on a daily basis as an academy goalkeeping coach, you know, showed, you know, real good ways of meeting young individuals and developing them and getting them to buy into you as a coach with so many different methods and ways of doing things. And then I've been lucky enough to work with some great, you know, outfield coaches as well, you know, Matt Raines, Matt Goodwin, who are youth development phase coaches here. I've get to pick the brains of people like Andy Dibble, and I was lucky enough to be able to support first team sessions working with Mike Stahl when Mike Stahl was here, and just to be around and learn and observe, you know, working with such names as Casper Schmeichel or, you know, and Ben Hamer and Danny Ward, and seeing how these guys work and just learn, and not necessarily you're not delivering, but you're supporting the session in terms of service, in terms of what they wanted, and to see how it's done at the top level and showcasing how you are progressing them, because the learning still carries on at the top level of the game.
I think that's a really important point, and it's something I always discuss when I'm working with coaches, that, you know, I appreciate that we're all working at different stages, different ages, different environments, from, you know, being what is very much participation football to that of an elite development pathway, if you like. But the one thing that I've always kind of struggled to kind of accept is when coaches are often pushing aside the responsibility of actually coaching the players they're not coaching the players in pursuit of, we want the players to enjoy it. And I always say to people, well, why can't they have both? Why can't they enjoy it and develop? And I often think it's a smokescreen for coaches to hide behind when they don't feel like they can develop the players, or what comes next. So coming back to your point about where, you know, getting to observe some of the top players, especially goalkeepers, what are some of the things that you observed that, you know, when in those environments around those sort of individuals, do you think to yourself, like, you know what? That's something that I've just seen there that I'm not even considering in my coaching, and the players that I'm working with, or I have worked up to now, aren't even thinking about.
I think at the top, from what I've seen at the top level, is characters that, you know, who are strong-minded people, strong individuals. And you might have, for instance, one who's a number one, and it's managing the expectations of a number two, getting that number two to be motivated. And, you know, the one, you know, he might not play for 10, 15 weeks. And, you know, he might then play in the FA Cup or the Carabao Cup or so on. And seeing communication strategies, and seeing, you know, having to cope with, you know, family life when they come out, you know, something might have happened at home, and or something might have, you know, not have had a good night's rest or so on, and coming out, or, you know, we're humans at the end of the day, they might toss it off. We've got that nature of, I'm just going out to train, I'm just going to go through the motions. And it's still, there's a real element of competitiveness at the top level, and but the environment is still a lot of fun based, and it's learning, and it's still a chance to pick each other's brains. You know, I've seen guys at 18, 21, first team who are still picking each other's, you know, brains with certain skill sets and certain techniques that they use, or being relatable to what they might have seen on the weekend by other goalkeepers or other players playing in the top divisions across the world.
And that's so important, right? Because obviously, you know, within that, and I'm a big believer that, you know, we have to be willing to have those conversations, whether as coaches, whether as players, whether as coach developers, that where we can, you know, literally express ourselves. Because I can't remember how the saying goes, but it's almost, if I have an apple and you have an apple, and we both give each other an apple, then we still both got one apple each, right? If I have an idea and you have an idea and we share ideas, now we've got however many we share, right?
Yeah.
So the more ideas, and again, sometimes I think the beauty of it, sometimes it further clarifies something you're already doing.
Yeah.
Sometimes it gives you a different trail of thought, which might end up taking you back to what you're already doing. But it allows you that platform just to kind of check and challenge your own processes, because it's almost... It's interesting. I've had a conversation with someone earlier today about this. That, you know, if there's a situation which is not impacting on you, why would you question it?
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Whereas if I bring it to your attention, even if it's still not impacting you, you've now got the platform to explore it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of obviously not just the collaboration that players can have amongst one another, but I think that's part of the role of the coach as well. Sometimes it's not about imparting knowledge or giving you the outcome or the solution. Sometimes it's just asking a couple of questions which will get you thinking about a certain thing. And it might actually be that as coaches, we don't even have the answer to the question that we've just asked, but we want to explore it with the players.
Yeah. And that's huge. Check and challenge is massive. We spend a lot of time in our own bubbles as individuals. You see it at the level, you know, I'm coaching at academy football at the minute, and sometimes we're very, you know, focused on, oh, this is me, and I'm in my work, this is my zone. And you forget around, actually, I'm doing this, but what does my counterpart think, or what can we do to bounce ideas off each other? And, it, you know, that's a real key component of development that we miss in the journey, because we become so infatuated by what we are doing by ourselves on a day-to-day basis.
Mm. And you just got me thinking, you know, a couple of different things there. You know, one, what does that collaborative approach look like generally? And how does what's the differences, I guess, between match day and training in terms of how you collaborate and, I guess, effectively deliver messages? I mean, you know, for a lot of coaches working here or listening to this right now, they may be working in academies themselves. They may also be volunteers. They might not even have access to goalkeeping coaches. So, I'm starting to, you know, think about how maybe coaches can walk away from listening to this conversation and start to think about ways how they can start to have an impact on the goalkeepers that they're working with.
I think this is a big thing, is you have to have defined roles within the session. So your pre planning of your framework is so important. Whether it's when you're coming out of isolation and you're moving into the outfield team-based practice on a training day, this is your role. This is what you're doing. You're responsible for working with the goalkeeper in the back four. Or, you know, one gentleman said to me, you know, goalkeeper coaches are the best striker coaches because they can give away the trade secrets of what the goalkeeper sees and what he looks to read for in terms of a 1v1 situation or a shot-stopping situation, and looking at that. So it's having that defined collective, managing individuals and managing expectations. And then I think for a training day, a match day, it becomes a lot more natural. So for example, my responsibility on a match day would be goalkeeping preparation, managing the goalkeepers that we have. So the one and two that are at starting and the one that's on the bench, and also responsible, is the team prepared for set plays, you know, in terms of organisation, structure, communication, pre-planning, and making sure everybody understands their role and responsibility from that aspect.
I think that's a really good way to look at it. So I guess, you know, building on from that then, if there's coaches listening to this right now thinking, where do I start in terms of becoming more integrated with my goalkeeping coach if I've got one in the environment? What would that look like?
I think communication has got to be the starting point.
Well, where does that conversation start though? Because it can't,
go and take a look at what's going on. Just create informal discussions by, oh, what's your plan for today? And, you know, that the coach might give you an insight to what they're looking to work on. And don't be afraid to voice your thoughts and your opinions. What about this? Or how can this relate to the practice that I'm doing within the team session? So I might be working on working on playing round and through. How does that relate to a session around building when we go into the team? I might be working in isolation around, yes, how do we work in transitional moments? So round and through, we're playing into midfield. And then how does the goalkeeper react to defending the space or defending the goal? So you can look by how you find them connection points within the practices, within the sessions, but it's got to start by understanding roles and responsibilities as a coaching group, communicate, challenge each other and give each other's thought process and be able to compromise within your planning and within your framework.
It's a really key thing, isn't it? It's just coming back to that middle ground, that compromise, right? It's just getting what's the best of both worlds. But what about, you know, I'm just thinking out loud now. And, you know, you get the situations where the goalkeeping coach is often, you know, and I've been in this situation myself where the goalkeeping coach is seeing the goalkeepers involved in the practices, but there's definitely no, I guess, deliberate and intentionally set outcomes for the goalkeepers other than the bodies in the goal.
I think we've seen that a lot. I think one thing that I've seen is the goalkeeper just sending them in a possession practice, in a rondo or whatever. But then they're going, oh, why are the end men? And we're going, well, what about getting them in? Getting them working on receiving from different angles. What about getting them in and, you know, having them working from the middle instead of the outside? And I think sometimes there's that one, they consider them session wreckers, you know, it's the goalkeeper, you can't play. But you look at some of the high-level goalkeepers now playing across Europe and worldwide. Prime example, if you look at Edison, you look at Alisson, Onana, David Rea, all these individuals, you'd probably say their strength is better than some outfield players in terms of their range of passing, the types of passes they could play at the top level. So they're only going to get better by being included and being in the mix and being put under pressure. And also, the biggest thing, we want the goalkeepers to be out there, out of their comfort zone. You know, can they cope with high-pressure situations and can they also have those thought-provoking moments in terms of being pressed from this angle, from the left, being pressed from the central. Can I be able to have that comfort, be able to disguise and play out and create different angles of support? And you only get that by challenging them and putting them under pressure in them sort of, you know, situations in terms of possession-based practices or other practices within team activities.
Yeah, and I love that because the simple thing about that is stuff that outfield coaches are probably already doing. So I guess, you know, building on from that then, if there is coaches listening to this that don't have access to a goalkeeping coach or the goalkeepers that they're working with haven't necessarily got goalkeeping coaches working with them, what would be some key kind of considerations that you want the outfield coaches to think about around where to begin supporting those goalkeepers?
I think the national goalkeeping staff at the minute run some great CPD events. And you've got a great group of open-minded individuals who are will not shy away from giving points and giving tips. I think reaching out to individuals across LinkedIn is massive as well in order for advice as a starting point and learning. And then if you're looking for when we get on the grass, is look at how it relates to the game. Look at what the needs or what you want from your goalkeeper, or where you feel that you want to get more out of them. So like we always boil back to the distribution standpoint. Think about, right, I'm designing a practice. How can I improve my goalkeeper to be able to play under pressure? Do I put him as an end man? Do I put him in the middle? Do I put him, you know, on the side, wherever? Or look at how the framework of your practice that you're designing, so the goalkeeper might want to work on shot stopping, that could fall under a finish in the attack practice for the outfielders, and look at work at how you collaborate and link together if you do not have the resources available in terms of goalkeeping development. So just think about relating it to how it looks in maybe 7v7, 9v9, 11v11, and then you'll be able to meet not just one person's needs, a wider collective of individuals' needs in order for their development.
It's got me thinking again now, you know, obviously we talk about individual needs, and especially in today's, I guess, landscape, you get a lot of parents who I think are obsessed with the idea of their child becoming a professional, right? So they want to do everything they can to support them, including the infamous private coach. So, you know, what are your thoughts on goalkeeping coaches who are operating outside of clubs, and maybe operating out of goalkeeping, I guess, academies and centres? And how does that conflict with what maybe...
A lot of good guys operating across the country. I've seen individuals, you know, who are also experienced at working in other clubs who are doing it on a private basis, and I do it myself on a private basis. But there's also good, you know, guys coming out who have got their badges, who are coming out of the game now from scholar level 21s, and it's providing another avenue for their development, or if they're going to be coming out of full-time football into maybe part-time football. So it's, you know, they're providing their knowledge and expertise to young individuals. And I think it's important. Goalkeeping is such an individual craft, and you individual, you know, areas of development that have so many little micro components in order to for their, the skill set to develop. I think it's really, really important. It's really, really important. But as long as the sessions are structured and the group or the individual one-to-one that you are working with understands what the goals are and what they need to set. You spoke about parents are obsessed by wanting their kid to be a professional footballer. We know this. It's very important to outline how tough the road is and how tough the journey can be in terms of reaching that goal. You know, I've worked with goalkeepers who I've looked at and gone, brilliant, but because, you know, it's not their work ethic, it might be their not meeting the physical needs of what a club might want, it might be the character and how they portray themselves. I had a conversation with an individual who was on trial with another Cat 1 club a couple of weeks ago, and I said to him, what is your coach's name? And he couldn't tell me what your coach's name are. And that screams red flags to me and alarm bells that how are you going there to influence individuals if you don't know what the name are and of the individuals that are developing you during this 8-week period or 12-week period? You've got to make a statement and people have got to know about you, but also it's down to you can be given all the tools, all the craft to, when you cross the white line, but it's down to your ownership as an individual in order to meet each small, you know, small goal along the way. And then if I on the flip side to the parents sometimes need to have that not abrupt way of telling them, but sometimes they need to be given examples in order to just let the kid develop at their own rate, their own path, but also be there to check and challenge the individuals that you will work your child is working with on along the process, along the journey.
It's a real tricky one though, because I think within that, I mean, I've always said this, that I don't think a parent who's not got the best of intentions. It's almost sometimes misguided, maybe undereducated in that respect. But do you think that, I guess, we are in a landscape or we are in a time where players aren't held accountable enough? So for those little things where they think like everything should be not necessarily given to them, but they think everything should be done for them, in a sense, like, you know, if they've got an issue, someone else should be asking them what the issue is rather than them having to take the step up.
Massively. It's scary, some of the numbers that are being bandied about that young individuals are taking. And I think we're only just in the last, I'd probably say, 5 to 8 years that player care is really taking a massive role in the development of young men or young women. Within the industry, you know, like I said, massive figures bandied about lack that everything's gifted on a plate sometimes, and don't forget about, right, that money's not going to last forever. You know, that wealth, so understanding the wealth management, forgetting, they forget sometimes that then having another craft or another, you know, professional avenue to fall back on is really, really important. And it's, I think Player Care are doing a brilliant job. They are doing a real brilliant job now at really educating young athletes with having the avenues and the skill sets, you know, in order to have a prolonged professional, you know, after either being an athlete or being a professional, you know, in the industry within another field.
I think it's a great point. You know, Player Care definitely has, you know, I guess, come to the forefront of everything at the moment. I think there's so many different reasons as to why that is so important. So I guess just to build on that, then, I'm conscious that, you know, I'm conscious of time, and I'm also wanting coaches to walk away with some key things to think about. So I guess from your perspective, what are some of the key things that you want the coaches to really take away from the conversation today? And if it's not specifically from the, what we've discussed so far.
I think coaches, no matter your age, if you are wanting to do this as a full-time, you know, professional coach, I think sacrifice is massive. Sacrifice is huge. Go and see what other people do. Go and learn from other industries. Embrace change, embrace learning. Don't be afraid to deal with criticism. People are not going to like what you do. Not everybody's going to like what you do, sorry. And just being able to cope with rejection. Rejection's going to happen a million and one times across this journey. Don't let that deter you from reaching your goals. Set yourself small term goals, and then your mid ones, and then your long ones. And just have a target. Have a target. And go and showcase yourself to everybody. I will tell you now, a lot of people in the football industry will reach out and go and connect with you and give their time and give their advice. And enjoy the journey, enjoy learning, enjoy developing, enjoy the ups and downs that you're going to have, the emotional sacrifices that you might have to make. And, you know, it'd be great to see some great young individual coaches coming up, you know, hopefully bypassing and us learning from them as well as them learning from us.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, one of the key things that, you know, certainly landed with me or stuck with me throughout this conversation is every individual's journey is individual.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You know, you gave the analogy of, you know, you might have to go to the top of the mountain and then come back down again, or whatever route you take to get to the top of it in the first place. I think it's understanding that there is no linear journey. And I think it's just us understanding, right, what can we take from the experiences that we've got? Who are we surrounding ourselves with that can maybe check and challenge what we're doing, offer us observations and bring some things to the forefront of our minds that we weren't aware that were already there. But no, I really enjoyed it, Amro, man. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for giving up your time today, obviously, for this podcast.
So thank you very much, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
There you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.